Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, I'm a little more excited about our episode. This episode's been worked on for a couple months now. We've really been trying to align our schedules. And as you hear, it's been a little difficult because, well, we're in the middle of season for our guest. Our guest today is Dr. Desiree Festa, the team psychologist, or we all know the team, the Buffalo Bills. And if I remember correctly and everything I've read, all the players call you Dr. Des. Is that correct?
Yes, Dr. Des, Coach McDermott gave me that name on day one. So my first day on the job was February 2020 at the Combine. And Coach McDermott's like, hey, can I call you Dr. Des? And so that's how the name stuck.
I like that. It's catchy. And I'm sure the players love it too.
Yes.
So February 2020, you get introduced as the team psychologist. And then how did that go? Because, well, just a few weeks later, everything stopped. And boy, I'm sure after that point, you probably really got working.
Yeah. So we had the full combine that year and then everything shut down. So I didn't even get introduced to the players person until July of 2020. Yeah. I'm doing the math in my head. So we were on Zoom for off-season training. So I got introduced to the team via Zoom to the players. Fortunately, because I was at the combine and that did happen, I was able to meet a majority of the coaching staff, personnel staff, front office at that moment in time. But yeah, to get introduced to the team via Zoom is a different experience, but we all had to learn to adjust it. Yes, I am the team psychologist, but I'm also the team sports psychologist. So there's a little
even
bit of
better
difference
even
in nuance.
Better.
Yes. Yeah. So as a sports psychologist, I focus on not just the mental health of the athletes, but the mental performance. So mental performance techniques to help them optimize their skills on the field and perform on game day, as well as all the life things and the mental health issues that everyone has. I'm there as a resource for them as well.
Now, I kind of put the cart before the horse because I was so excited about this. And you know what? I usually look at the guest and say, tell us a little bit about yourself. So if maybe you can give our listeners a little background and where you were educated, your degrees, and how you kind of ended and weaved your way into the NFL, which is such a cool story.
Yes, it is an interesting story because this role in the NFL did not exist. This role in many teams did not exist when I started. So I became interested in sports psychology as a junior in high school. I was really passionate about psychology, and I knew at that point in time that was the direction I wanted to go. And then also learned about sports psychology. And it was just seemed like a great fit because I'm passionate about sports, passionate about psychology. So why not just combine those two passions together? So from there, I decided to go to Eastern University. It's a small school outside of Philadelphia, and it had a major in psychology and a minor in sport and coaching. It had a undergrad sports psychology course, and I was able to play tennis there for a year as well. So I was able to be a student athlete. And so that seemed like the next best step because I really wanted to figure out, is this field of sports psychology something I wanted to do? I wanted to learn more about it. I took a junior level sports psychology course as a freshman right away because I'm like, I need to figure out, is this the direction I actually want to go? So for me, I was thinking long term at that point in time. Where do I want to put myself long term? What path do I want to put myself on that can serve me best and my future self best in life? So fortunately, I was really passionate about sports psychology through my experience at Eastern University. And then from there, I went to Florida State and I got my master's in sports psychology. So a master's in sports psych is really just focused on the mental performance techniques. At that program, we were assigned teams. We started working with student athletes right away. Everything was focused on how can you optimize the performance of an athlete. And it was a great program. It's a 2-year program. I got a lot of hands-on skill and with supervision and mentorship, did a master's thesis in sports psych. It was really beneficial for my role at this point in time. From there, I also saw the limitations of working just on the mental performance side of the athlete, because the athlete is so much more than just the athlete. They have lives, they have relationships, they have mental health in different states, whether it's optimal mental health or struggling mental health. And I remember one of the first student athletes that I worked with, she was a very, very talented athlete, very talented. And initially, she came to me as a trainee to work on performance anxiety. And then through working with her, she would also talk about, hey, she struggles with ADHD. So there's some attention issues in school. But then also, she mentioned having seasonal depression and then self-harm behaviors as well that she would cover up as a
Oh
student
my.
athlete.
Oh my.
Yeah. So from there, I obviously, a trainee just focused on the mental performance side of things, I had to talk to my supervisor. We had to refer her to the college counseling center. And I realized the limitations of being in that role. But if you're a sports psychologist who is both trained in the mental performance and the mental health, if you're a professional and you have that student athlete sitting in front of you, you can help her with all of that, all of those different things. You could help her with the performance side, you could help her with the mental health issues, you can wrap your arms around that athlete's total mental space and help optimize them in their complete self, not just their athlete self, but just their day-to-day life. And so that was really important for me. So from there, I decided to get my PhD in counseling psychology so that I was trained properly in the mental health side of things. So it was a longer road. When doing that PhD in counseling psychology, I had to redo the master's mental health courses. And then go on to the PhD coursework. So it added on a few more years of school because the sports
Oof.
psych master's was too sports specific. It didn't have anything related to mental health.
Oh my.
Yeah. So it was 8 years of graduate school to get the proper training and qualifications. So it's a long road, but it paid off. It put me in a place that I really want to be. I feel very confident and skilled to work with student athletes or athletes, I apologize, any athlete when it comes to what they have going on in their mental space.
Wow, amazing.
So a lot of students reach out to me and say, hey, I'm interested in doing what you're doing. And when I explain the graduate school route, hey, get your master's in sports psych and then continue on in your PhD, there are some programs that have it combined. So it cuts off a few years, but it's still going to be a 5-6 year program post undergrad.
But let's be realistic. If you're going to go into healthcare, you better be committed. It's you're taking someone's life and trying to help it become better. So whether it's 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 12 years, whatever it is, it's a commitment and it's a calling. So you better be prepared to put in the time.
Yeah, and I appreciate the fact that you said the word it's a calling because a lot of students reach out to me and they're like, oh, you're in the pros, you work with professional athletes, and they see the glitz and the glam and what you see on TV. I watched a game on TV the other day and I was like, whoa, that's what our games look like on TV? Like, what a production!
Oh
It just looks different than real life. I mean, it's still a production, but it just looks different. And so that's what they see. And I tell the student athletes, not the student athletes, I tell the students that are reaching out to me, if you're interested in this profession, be interested in sports psychology first and foremost. Be passionate about the field itself. And if you end up at the pro level, then you end up at the pro level. And sometimes the pro level isn't the fit for everyone too. It's all about fit and where you're meant to go. And so some of the students still want to move forward, but there is a handful that say, maybe I'll look into some other things. There's actually some of our athletes, some of our players say, hey, when I'm done playing, I want to do what you do, Dr. Dez.
Really?
Yeah, it's a it's
That's
the highest compliment
awesome.
I could get.
Yeah, that's so cool. It
Yeah.
you know what? And I'm one of those guys as an athletic trainer.
Yep.
You know, I hate to say we dabble in a little bit of mental health, but we actually had to take a lot of psych classes, or what I believed at the time was a lot of psych classes, because we're the front line. Not all of us are blessed. And as you said, many NFL teams do not have someone like yourself on the sidelines, correct?
Yeah, so the NFL has a requirement through their CBA that there has to be a mental health professional part of their organization, a minimum of 8 hours a week in season, and they have to be in your building 8 hours a week. So that is the minimum. There's, I believe, six of us that are full-time, fully embedded with the NFL, and that, and it's going to, I believe that it's going to change over time. What we're doing at the Bills, there's going to be more positions at other teams once someone gets exposure of what a full-time, fully integrated sports psychologist looks like in the NFL, they want to replicate that other places.
I believe that you're preaching to the choir. Like I was saying, you know, for the longest time, I thought I wanted to do the NFL. That was it. I was going straight to the NFL. Don't get in my way. And it's a fit.
Yep.
You think of your fit. And I found St. Francis High School in wonderful La Cañada, California, 5 minutes above the Rose Bowl. And I thought, we'll stay here a couple of years and see what happens. And 27 years later, here we're talking. So, you know, fit, comfort, not security, but really the quality of life that you have and the administrators around you, how your players respond to you. The fact that they say, Dr. Dez, I want to do what you do someday, compliment is an understatement. That says everything about you as a healthcare professional.
Thank you. And I want them to. I would
Yeah.
love to have more player sports psychologists because they could speak in a different way and also model that there is another career and there's another life post football as well. So there are some that I'm really encouraging. There's some that have, they have retired and they're thinking about educational steps. It is a long road, so sometimes they need just a moment to pause after being in the NFL and get a break. But there's a few that I'm really hopeful and giving guidance to that they can move in this path or something similar. It doesn't necessarily have to be going all the way to the PhD end of it, but just working in the mental space of athletes. Yeah, I hope many of them get into that space.
What an inspiring story, because that's only going to help others, whether they, you know, get into it or just get exposed to it. Then they can really help other athletes, friends, colleagues, family members understand what you do, the mental health side of sports, which has really been exposed since, well, I hate to say it, 2020. That's when everything really stepped to the foreground. At least that's what I've seen. And please correct me if I'm wrong, because this is your area of expertise. 2020 and the shutdown and the mental issues that really stepped forward that we see at the high school level really brings together in my department our medical staff and our wellness staff, as we call them, at the high school level. We're constantly in communication to take care of these young athletes. And I'm sure you're the same way with the athletic trainers and medical staff at your facility.
Yeah, we have a meeting once a week, a medical meeting that we all sit down. We talk about the injuries of the players. Like we all get together and we have a weekly touch point to make sure that we're all on the same page. How are guys doing? Athletic trainers are an amazing resource for sports psychologists because you are boots on the ground and sometimes you're the pre-therapy. There's a lot said on a training table. And then you see
Oh,
those.
yes. A little too much sometimes.
And then sometimes, or many times, you see those players every single day. You're interfacing them with them every single day. So you get a pulse of when they're high, when they're low, when they're frustrated, when they're going through tough times, when they're in a good spot. So it's a really helpful partnership between me and the athletic trainers, especially when they'll say, hey, just do a run by so and so today. He looked a little upset. This just happened to him. Those heads up are really great.
I know when we talk with our wellness department, that's a huge comment is, hey, have you seen, we'll say
Yep.
Johnny, that's always a safe one. Have you seen Johnny in the last few weeks? Something seems to be bothering him. And next thing we know, they're taking care of it. We connect a little later and find out what's going on. Because like you said, that's a great way to put it. We're boots on the ground as the athletic trainer. It's not our specialty, but I joke with a lot of colleagues. We're kind of like the bartender. You tell the bartender everything, and there are
Right.
things the bartender doesn't want to hear. Same thing in the training room. There are things we don't want to hear, but every now and then it's important because then we can step in and direct them to a professional like yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And injury itself is hard. Like there is a
Yeah.
mental component to injury. So that collaboration where we're taking care of the physical and the mental together in conjunction with injury, you're just optimizing that rehab process.
So true. At the high school level, these young boys, and again, I always say boys because I work at an all boys high school. They identify not as just a young man, but as an athletic young man. So if they're on the football team, they're on the baseball team. So what do you do at school? I'm a baseball player. Well, no. What classes do you take? What I'm a baseball player. I'm a football player. It is so ingrained in their identity that once they're injured. I'm sure you see it all the time. They don't know how to identify themselves, and it really takes a mental toll so often.
Yeah, and speaking of identity during injury, something that we would work on during that time as an athlete is reshaping your identity. You know, I really like to tell the athletes, like, football or baseball or basketball is something you do to express these different attributes and qualities of yourself, but it's not who you are. Because at one point that game is going to end and they need to move on, and then they feel like they lose a huge part of themselves. So what I try to do is help them see that football or whatever sport it is a vehicle to express who they are, but it doesn't define them. Because when an athlete has a large athletic identity and they go through an injury or an obstacle, they just don't feel like they're failing or having a setback in their sport. They feel like they're failing at their life. So if we could shrink down that athletic identity and then beef up or amp up all these other qualities that they have, discipline, problem solving, their relationships, their hobbies, their creativity, then that helps buffer the ups and downs in their sport.
Wow. That's nails. That's awesome. So true though. I'm thinking about it and I'm putting it into the perspective of clinically what we do here. And it is so true. That is just wow. Just a wow moment. Drop the mic, step away. Very
Yeah,
good, Doc Des.
so for our athletes too, this is bye week right now, so they get time off. They're not playing. Something I recommend to them is, hey, let's take the literal and metaphorical uniform off. I don't want you wearing anything Bills. I don't want you to go by first name, last name, right? Because when you're a professional athlete, everyone knows you by your first name and last name. I just want you to be whoever you are in the relationships that are most important to you. So let's just get a break from football and lean into these other aspects of yourself during these next 5 days.
I really hope my wife doesn't listen to this because I'm going to be in a lot of trouble after everything you just said. Yeah, a day off, not wearing St. Francis gear, not talking about work, not yeah, you're getting me in trouble now. Just thank you so much. But we're safe because she never listens, so I'm good.
There you go. That's very good for your mental health. You can't be all in on one thing all the time. That's where we create burnout and fatigue and extra pressure that doesn't necessarily need to be there as much.
Now, let's turn the table on you. It's bye week, and I see you're wearing something that has the Bills on it yourself.
I know. So bye week for staff is a little different. So I just came from the facility. I was in there this morning. We have our rehab guys in. So speaking of injured players, rehab guys stayed back for these next few days to do some extra rehab, spent
Got to
some
take
time with
care of them.
them. Yeah, it's tough. You got your teammates are on an island or in Florida somewhere, and you are still here in Buffalo. So that's a good time to spend time with them and check in on them while they're still here.
It's funny how the bye week doesn't really become a bye for us. So I understand that all too well.
Yes.
All too well, yeah. Do you at least get an afternoon or an evening away from the facility this week?
We have some flexibility. We'll get some few days off, and then we'll be up and running. So we need to do what we need to take care of ourselves because we have 6 guaranteed weeks left plus a potential postseason. So staff has to be in their most optimal state as well. We think about the players, we think about coaches, but staff members in sports are performers. You are expected to operate at a high level and respond to some unknown situations quickly and effectively. So optimizing ourselves, our own mental space is important too. So it's important for all of us to take those moments away, get a break, and lean into the other relationships we have outside of the building.
Yeah, my wife says that's usually your summer month, Eli. Okay, so we'll see you then. Yeah,
Right.
know that very well. You mentioned something, and we discussed this beforehand. We want to touch just a little bit on it, knowing we're not going to go into specifics because, well, there's this thing called HIPAA, and we're healthcare professionals. First off, before I go there, congratulations on the big win this last weekend.
It was a week 11 win for us. So it was just another game.
Well, but still, it was a good win.
Thank
Beating
you.
can giving Kansas City their, I believe that was their first loss, wasn't it, of the season?
Yes, they were
Yes.
undefeated until the point
So,
that we played.
congratulations. It was a great game. It's fun to watch.
Thank you.
But I had to say that. It was great. Anyway, NFL fan, so love that kind of stuff. You were thrust into a very unique situation that we, as healthcare providers, hope we never have to deal with. One thing I teach in my sports med class is the reason I left hospital settings and got back into a school setting, traditional setting, is I got tired of watching people pass away. I really did. And unfortunately, but then fortunately, the Bills had a very unique, poignant moment not too long ago that pretty much the entire nation watched. And you, as a professional, had to step in, I'm sure, and not just help the athletes afterwards, but also the staff. What was that like? And can you just kind of talk about what you did to help so many?
Yeah, so I am an N of one at the Buffalo Bills. So to put this in context, in the off season we have 90 players. In regular season we'll have 70 players on our roster and 22 coaches. When we travel with roughly, say, 50 players. And then there's about, I'm throwing out rough numbers. There's 22 coaches and there's about 50 staff that travel. So it's a big group of individuals. So with that cardiac event that happened to us a few years ago, so I was there on the field at that moment in time.
Oh
So
my
I was
goodness.
present for them. So I travel with the team. I'm there on the sideline for every game. And part of the reason is for a situation like this. When if a situation happens that is a medical emergency that will need mental health and psychological support right there at the moment in time that the crisis is happening. So as the mental health professional, my role at that time is to first be there with them when the crisis is happening. There's not, you can't change how they're feeling. You can't change what's happening, but the most important thing is for people to feel supported. So my role on the field at that time, as our players are having such emotional response to what they're seeing to a teammate that they care greatly about, is to put my arms around them and to stand with them in that pain, in that grief, in that confusion, so they didn't feel alone. And then from there, helping leaders and individuals in our organization on what our next step should be for taking care of the overall mental health of this organization after we just went through a significant situation. So to put this in context, the game was on Monday Night Football. So
Yes,
typically,
it was. I remember it vividly.
yeah, so normally that's a we have a 7-day preparation, but we are going into a 6-day preparation, a shorter week, which can be challenging in itself in football, then to move on to a next game. And there's just so many unknowns of how do we handle the next steps. I think it was beneficial because I was already integrated with the team. So I'm not an outside person coming into a crisis who doesn't have relationships, who doesn't know the individuals. I'm already integrated, and we've been already doing a lot of things for the mental wellness and the mental health of our players from the get-go. And we really created a culture where guys feel comfortable talking to each other about their mental and emotional state prior to a tragic event happening to our team. Our team was able to just lean on each other. Players were able to support one another. And it was such a beautiful thing to see these tough NFL players really lean into that emotional space and support one another and put their arms around each other. And the system helped heal itself in a lot of ways.
Now, for those of you who are, I don't know, maybe you were traveling to the moon that day, just to make sure. Won't mention the athlete's name right now, and that'll be the only time we mention it. On January 2nd, 2023, athlete Damar Hamlin was struck at the wrong moment, at the wrong nanosecond, and suffered what was called a commodio, I always say it wrong, commodio cordis condition, which is where blunt force trauma goes to the chest, and because of it, your heart stops. Quick actions by the medical staff on site, including the AED and CPR, resuscitated him, and he is now back in the NFL playing. But if you were watching that game and you were anywhere near the TV and saw it, you knew something was wrong by the reaction of his peers, his friends, the staff. And if you knew medical, you knew what was going on at that field. You didn't know it was what the condition was, but you knew it was significant. Now, thank God that it all worked out the way it did, because it really would have been just horrible any other way. But at the same time, like you said, the ability of others to lean into a program. You weren't a crisis interventionalist coming in out of nowhere, a new face. How do we trust you? They already knew you. They were comfortable with you. They could really lean into you and others and each other. And I think one of the beautiful things I saw was how the NFL community and fans from all over really embraced the Buffalo Bills in the following weeks, and really, I mean, showed love. It was beautiful. It really was.
Yeah, there's a lot of signs. Love for Damar. Our medical staff and our training staff got a lot of recognition. We won an ESPY award for that response. Fortunately, our training staff included me in that process. So I'm so grateful that they had me part of that process because they recognized the whole mental health component that occurred at that moment and then
Oh,
followed.
yes.
And so, like I said earlier, staff needs to be optimal and they have to perform at a high level. Like this is an example of that. And they definitely did that. And I also remember having a conversation with one of our players. So one of the things, many interventions, I've done it at kind of a side note. I did a 2-hour presentation training to other sports psychologists in pro sports just on our first week of going through that situation. Took me 2 hours to go through all that we did at that point in time.
Only 2 hours? I could see that taking a whole week just to talk about. Oh my God.
It's a lot to digest. But one of the interventions I made sure to do is, we just didn't want players alone or to feel alone. Now, some of them did need to separate, and that was their coping, and that's fine. But I checked in on our players that I knew were going home to an empty house. Maybe they didn't have a significant other, they didn't have anyone living with them, and checking in with one of them, asking him how he's doing. One of the things that struck me, he said, "Well, at least the world understands now that we're human." and that we have
Oh.
emotions. A lot of times they see us as gladiators,
Yeah. Oh my God.
but now we are humans with emotions. And so and you could see the pictures, you could see the video, you could see their emotional reaction real time live, and it definitely put on the forefront the mental health and well-being of these players and humanize them in many ways.
That's so true. See, I to me it's second nature because I live in that in this profession. You know, okay, they're not gladiators. They just happen to be extremely fit, very large human beings. They have hearts, they bleed, they have emotions, they love, they hurt, there's pain, and not just physical. And it was one of the few it, after that, so God bless you, God bless everybody on the medical staff. That was the first time the weeks followed that someone came to our school and asked, do we have an athletic trainer on staff? And I tried not to laugh when she asked me. I'm like, yes, ma'am, that's me. Oh, I didn't realize that's what you did, Mr. Hallett. Yes. But it really brought to the forefront, like you said, it humanized these men. And I mean, you think about it. You know, you've got all these professional athletes that are women too. It really took all these professional athletes and humanized them. And at the same time, it brought healthcare to the forefront. It really did. And I could only imagine how many hours you put in those following weeks that were needed.
Yeah, because that was the end of our season, and then we had playoffs after that. So there was a lot happening in a very short period of time. Yeah, a lot of unknowns at that moment. So we have written the playbook on a situation like this. It's not a one size fits all, but hopefully this does not happen to another NFL player.
I'm going to knock on wood right now. So let's hope that definitely.
But it can happen in other sports, from my understanding. It can happen in the sport of baseball, like a pitcher getting hit. So this is not the first time a situation has happened like this. Ours just so happens happened on a public stage.
Very public. Yeah, so true. All right, let's get away from that because that was oh man, that was a situation and we had discussed wanting to talk about it and I don't want to say that's almost like a Super Bowl moment, but it really is for those of us in emergency action planning and taking care of people and then the follow-up. Kudos to you. Kudos to
I
the
would
entire staff. And thank God it ended up the way it did. I mean, really.
exactly. But as it was happening, we didn't know how it was going to end up. So it was
Yeah.
very different. This is
Oh.
a hindsight view. So we weren't sure of the outcome. So it was a really
Yeah.
scary moment. And it definitely put athletic trainers on the forefront. It also put mental health professionals. I had many colleagues of mine in the NFL come to me and said, "Hey, our team's traveling me now because of the situation that you went through." So it just brought more awareness to mental health emergencies. But we are
Yeah.
needed beyond, in addition to the mental health emergency, we're needed
We're needed. We're just
all
needed.
mental health situations.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to aacitest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. Now, I've got to ask something a little more personal, little, it'll hit home. How did you cope with that? Because that's a lot to take in as an individual. You are the point person, but I'm sure you knew him pretty well. So.
I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunately, this is not my first mental health crisis. That was a team-wide situation. So when I was a consultant for the athletic department at UNC Charlotte, I worked in that athletic department for about 7 years as a consultant, coming in multiple times a week. There was a campus shooting, and I actually had one of the student athletes call me while she was hiding underneath her bed.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
and some student athletes were present in the shooting location. I learned a lot from that situation and seeing how different teams responded, how different coaches responded, and how that impacted their student athletes. In addition to that, when I worked in, so I worked in NASCAR, that was really fun. It's not a sport you're ever really trained on, but there's always the threat of death in a race, as you know, from Dale Earnhardt. So I remember one of the drivers, Ryan Newman, there was a car crash and I got a call. I was not at that race. I went to some of the races, but I did not go to all the races. And I said, I got a call and said, hey, we think he almost died. Like, we think he so-and-so killed him in a crash because a car hit him. And I worked with that pit crew. So I had to come in and work with that pit crew the next day after that situation. I learned a lot there. From my experience, I've learned how important my own self-care is at that moment in time. Because as a psychologist, you are the vehicle of treatment. And if your mind is not as sharp or ready, you're not going to give the most important care. So for me, when we went through that cardiac situation, my first defense was, I need to get sleep. There wasn't a lot of sleep, but I have to make sure I sleep. And then secondly, I have to consult with other well-respected sports psychologists to make sure that the steps we're taking are the proper steps. And that's just not the steps in my own mind. Let me talk this out through another sports psychologist professional who I trust. Hey, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And then I'm not leaning just on my own experiences. I'm actually leaning on the experiences of many other people that I respect.
Your trusted network of colleagues. Yeah.
Yeah. The Pittsburgh Steelers had a situation that happened about 7 years ago where a player ended up being paralyzed from a hit. And so Dr. Ken Nash was a great resource for me. Dr. Chris Carr from the Green Bay Packers, I've known him well for a long time. He was a great resource. So I just leaned on other trusted professionals to make sure I was making my own proper steps as I actually go through this process as well. Since I was on the field, I got home late like everyone else. I'm dealing with the long days as well. So let me make sure that I'm not making decisions in a silo. And the last thing you want to do in a mental health crisis is make decisions in a silo. As psychologists, we are taught consult, consult, consult. So it's important to consult with other trusted individuals.
Now, when you say in a silo, for those individuals that don't know what that phrase means, can you explain that for them?
Yeah, I make a joke sometimes, but I'm kind of on an island. I'm the only sports psychologist and mental health professional in the building. So I'm the only one who does what I do. So I know my colleagues who are also full-time embedded, whether it's in the NFL or in hockey, other professional leagues, you're the only one there too. So it's really important for us to build that network where there's people that I can call right now. They will pick up the phone and consult and we'll support one another.
Thank you. What a life experience you've gone through in all three of those occasions and how each one built to help you take care of all those people during that game on Monday night.
Yeah. Also, I want to give a shout out to Dr. Amanda Edwards. She's also the sports psychologist of the Buffalo Sabres. So she's part-time with them, but she's local. She was also a great resource to have. So it's always important to have your network and reach out to others.
We hear that almost every episode. Network, network, network. You got to have your trusted network of colleagues that you can rely on and keep growing that network because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. My students hear that all the time and they roll their eyes. Mr. Halleck, really? Yes, guys, trust me. Trust me. But what do I know? I'm an old guy. So, you know, I'm not a teenager. So when you're dealing with the athletes, Dr. Dez, and they're coming in and you're getting to know them, you get to meet them, what's your favorite way to make sure they know you're here for them? How can you get them to trust you?
Yeah, that's a good question, because especially in professional sports, there could be a lot of distrust. Where's information going? Their career is on the line. It's, you know, something can get exposed or out that could potentially hurt their roster on the spot or their performance. So being a trusted resource is really important as a psychologist, but then also in other professions. Professional athletes will test you. They will vet you out. They will make sure that you are confident and trustworthy. So it's not always assumed, like right away you walk in and everyone's going to trust you. So one of the things that's really important for me to emphasize is the confidentiality piece. I tell them, hey, the NFL does not give me my license. The NFLPA does not give me my license. It's the state of New York that I get my license to practice from. And if I break confidentiality, I just don't lose a job. I lose a career that I'm really passionate about.
Oh,
So,
that's a great, great comment.
and it's important for me that they feel trusted. And so that information is confidential. And then they are in the driver's seat of who knows what, who's included. And what I have seen over time that I see this in my building, but also other buildings, that players are comfortable to say, hey, I'm meeting with a team sports psychologist. They might not want the details of what's going on, but the field has become more normalized where athletes are more willing to share that they are meeting with their team sports psychologist and not necessarily seeing it as a problem-based resource. That's another approach that I take, that this is about optimization. This is about being proactive. This is not that when you talk to me, there's a problem. So many of our athletes and our players take that approach of like, let's optimize. I'm doing this to optimize my performance. So even just seeing me in the building, they'll talk to me on the sideline. One guy, him and I do walk and talks after practice and we loop the field together. They'll talk in the training room. So it's not always behind a closed door where it feels really, really clinical. They feel more open and comfortable in any space. And something that's important for me is meet them where they're at is really important. So I go into the training room. I do loops through the training room, hit the different tables, see how guys are doing, check in. And sometimes we're talking about important things, and sometimes we're just talking about what they just watched on Netflix. Like it could be super light. So talking to me doesn't necessarily mean like we're working on something mental health related. A lot of it is relationship building and just to get to know them as people and humans. And so it's really important for me to have touch points with every single player on our roster on some level where I know something about them beyond their name and their position, but where they're from, their family, things that they're interested in. And so we'll just have really casual conversations out in the public. So seeing me doesn't have any context to it.
You're just Dr. Dez, and they're just talking. You're just a normal person.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Dez. I'm Dez. I'm an occasional Desi and an occasional DD. I get a lot of nicknames. So, but
Nicknames are good. That
yeah,
means they like you, usually.
and I'm with them every day too. So I'm not this outside person coming in occasionally. I have been that person in that role. It's got its pros and cons, but in this role, I like being the embedded because I'm with them for the journey. I'm with them every day at practice. I'm with them on the road. One of our players sits next to me on the bus, and we call each other bus buddies because he sits down and he tells me, yeah, he tells me stories from college. Like he's a big storyteller. So he'll just tell me stories from college. So I really enjoy that form of psychology. And I really feel like sports psychology might be an example of where the field of psychology goes. Because in the past, it's been very clinical. And you go to this office and you meet this person once a week. But with sports psychology, especially an embedded model, you are embedded in their life. You're with them for the day to day, the highs and the lows. So let's say an athlete has a panic attack, like you're there helping them manage that situation, not they have a panic attack and then 3 days later they come to your office and be like, hey, I was in this situation and then I had a panic attack. What do I do? It's retroactive in a lot of ways. This is right in the moment as situations are happening. You're there as a resource.
You're the resource in the acute moment of that panic attack, injury, whatever it is.
Or even on the sideline during the game, I'm
Yep.
present, I'm on the sideline. So I'm not doing any major interventions that take a lot of time by no means, but I'm there as a resource. So if they need to just swing by and tell me something real quick, and then I say something really intentional that we have planned real quick, like a keyword, a phrase, something to help them reset, I just say that real quick. Or sometimes they're just passing by and we're just talking about the game real quick. So it could be anything if they're coming there, but I am a resource for them on the sideline as well.
That's so fantastic because then it, like you said, the embedded model You are part of their life, which allows them to trust you, get to know you, and that way they can share and become, whether it's in a clinical moment where they need help, or they need to vent, or they just want to joke with somebody and, hey, there's Dr. Des. I know she would appreciate this. They have another person in their network that they can trust, which, as you said earlier, I mean, people are always angling with athletes at any level. I even see it at the high school level. I can only imagine how often people are trying to take advantage of a professional athlete. So the fact they have somebody that they can joke with, they can be serious with, that they can trust, probably helps them tremendously get through the season, get through their life, get through every day.
Yeah, and there are some situations that the players can get through that we work together with one-on-one that no one has any idea that the player had this situation, that he was resilient. We figured out how to help him through this situation. So a lot of the work is done, I would say, in the shadows too. It can be behind the closed doors, and no one has no idea what that player has worked on and the adversity that he overcame and his success in his own personal life. And so you have to take those wins, like just you by yourself. You don't post it on Twitter. You don't go tell other people. The
Not at
player, they
all.
want to
Nope,
tell other
nope.
people. The player can. So you have to be comfortable just being in the shadows and the light is on the player. And that's why you're there. And that's another way to get trust. Like you said, people can angle themselves to get something out of the player, try to ride their coattails, but the players sniff that out. A lot of them can see
They're
that.
smart. They're smart. They know.
Yeah, they want authentic relationships.
Well, it sounds like they have a very authentic relationship with you. They're pretty damn lucky. So awesome. Good for the Bills. You've said so many things that I've sit there and gone, I just want to keep going. Normalization, one thing that popped in my mind when you said normalization, it's become so normalized to use a mental health professional. Heck, we got it in TV shows now. And not as a joke, not as a punchline. Ted Lasso. I mean, the fact they used a team wellness sports psychologist, I sat there when they introduced that character. I'm like, oh my God, this is phenomenal.
Yeah, who was respected and spoke multiple languages. Like, good for her.
Yes.
I do not speak multiple languages. So, yeah, it was great. It's great to see a model like that. And I believe in that show, even like the head coach has some problems and goes sees her as well. So it wasn't even just the athletes themselves, but the head coach needs guidance as well. So that brings also up the point of we think about players, but just think your coaches. I tell our coaches you're cognitive performers. Like you have to make quick decisions and communicate and react quickly on game day. So they have to be optimized. And the life as a coach, and as you know, a life as a staff member, it's a lifestyle. So there's
It
wear and
is.
tear with that as well. So being a resource for other individuals, as well as the athlete, is important. And I felt like the show showed that.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Now, I want to go way back to the first few minutes of this episode. And you said you got this little spark of interest back in high school. Was there a specific teacher? Was there a specific class that you'd like to give a little nod to, a little shout out to, that really sparked your interest?
Yeah, there's a lot there. So I loved my athletic experience in high school. I got the athletic director's award in high school. I played multiple sports. I was captain of multiple things.
Well, what sports did we play? We got to know.
I actually played, I ran track and I played field hockey as well. So when I was in college, I actually walked onto the tennis team. So I played tennis
Just
when I was younger.
because.
Yeah, I just wanted to be an athlete and play a
All
sport.
right.
So.
Very
I had
cool.
opportunities to run track elsewhere. So I had to make a tough decision. Do I run track at a school that had nothing related to sports psych? It had psychology classes, but no sports psychology program, no minor in sport and coaching, and run, which I was decent at, or do I put myself on my long-term path? So I'm glad I put myself on the long-term path. But yeah, how I found out about sports psychology, my mom was actually taking psychology courses at our local university, William Patterson University. I grew up in New Jersey, and she overheard someone mention this this field of sports psychology. That was it. She didn't take a class or anything, just overheard the word, came home to me and was like, hey, I overheard something called sport psychology that might be of interest to you. And that's it. That's all when it
Way
came
to
to.
go, Mom. All
Yeah.
right.
She saw my passion in both fields and saw that I would be a good fit, but really didn't know what it was. And I didn't
Right.
either. And sports psychology as a profession, there isn't a roadmap. Like athletic trainer, if one of your student athletes want to become an athletic trainer, they could watch you and get an idea of what the profession's like. I had no one to watch or figure out or see in action what this field looks like. So the field has grown, and unfortunately, I feel like I've caught the wave as the field is growing of moving forward. But yeah, there was no unknowns at that point. There was nothing known at that point. It was a lot of unknowns, and I had to just learn more and figure things out. So it's a funny side note too. Back in our off season, I went back to our high school and spoke along with our offensive tackle, Ryan Vandermark, because he and I went to the same high school,
Oh, that's
ironically.
so cool.
Yeah. So it was fun to do a presentation with one of my players at high school. It's like a full circle moment. And we're talking about mindset. He's talking about his journey. It was a really fun presentation to do.
That's awesome. That just brought a huge smile to my face. That's just so nice.
Yes.
Did you guys go to high school at the same time?
Ryan tells people that we graduated together, and I laugh. And I was like,
Got
wow, must have been very advanced to get through
it.
undergrad, master's, PhD, and have a career by this point. So,
Obviously, you
no.
graduated high school at what,
They're
eight, nine, something like
long,
that,
yeah.
right?
Well, definitely a significant gap.
It's wonderful to have friends and colleagues like that. I love it. That's a great comment. Looking at You said it's gone so far. I remember mentioning when we were talking a few weeks ago, the field, I know how far this field's come because I had a colleague in college. This is what she wanted to do. And we would talk about it in class and after class. And when I asked her, well, where do you have to go? She said, there's only at that time, and this is 1993, 94. So she said, there's only one school. And I don't
Yeah.
remember which school it was, but at the time there was only one school with the program. She said, and it's so hard to get in. I'm probably going to do my bachelor's and finish my bachelor's here in kinesiology and study coaching, teaching, and then go work on my master's and then go get my PhD. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. But that's a similar route to what you did, bachelor's,
Yeah.
master's, PhD. There are a lot more nowadays, I would hope. And it sounds like
Yes, definitely more than one, but I wouldn't say that there's a
not a plethora.
vast amount of programs. When I applied in the early 2000s, there was probably like five, six, less than 10, let's put it that way,
Oh,
less than 10
geez.
people. And they had different focuses. Some were very applied, hands-on, some were just really purely research-based. And then moving on from the master's to the PhD, you're setting yourself up to work in academia and do research, which there has to be research done for us to know
Definitely.
evidence-based approaches and learn about these elite minds and these elite brains and these elite athletes. So there has to be research. But there is applied focus, there's research focus, and then there were some that are combined. It was very few, it was only like two programs that were combined, sports psychology and counseling psychology. So put the mental performance and the mental health together. So there was limited options. So when I talk to students and they want to get into this career path and they're asking to stay in a specific city, it could be the city they grew up in or where they're going to undergrad, there's a strong chance they'll have to move. And
You got to be willing to go a different direction to get where you want to go sometimes.
yeah, so there is more programs now, but it's definitely limited in comparison to other career paths.
Interesting. I was not aware of that. We've already been talking an hour.
Wow. Great.
I promised you this would go fast. I did. I swore. And this has just been so educational. You can see the smile on my face. This has just been a blast. I've really enjoyed talking to you and listening and learning. There's so much more I want to ask, but you deserve the rest of the day to yourself and not talking to me. So I'm just purely going to ask one more question and
Sure.
just kind of let you, however you want to answer, and go on. And then we'll part ways and have our day. But first, I want to say thank you, because I have been waiting for this one. And I know our producer has too. This is everything I hoped it would have been. So thank you very much, Dr. Dez. If you could go sit down, talk to a earlier version of Dr. Dez and say, here's what you need to do to get where you want to go. What advice would you give yourself? What little pearls of knowledge that you know now would you want to give to yourself way back then?
I could think about myself in the middle of grad school doing like a school psychology rotation on administering IQ tests. I mean, I had a very robust training in all different areas of psychology, and things feeling like it's taking a really long time and not being frustrated, but just eager for the next steps to happen and it coming along. I would just tell myself, you're doing all the right steps, and all these different trainings and all these different experiences, even though it feels far away from what you want to do in real life, sets you up really well for these next steps. So I would say I felt like I had a lot of patience, but those moments that I didn't have patience, just knowing that this will pay off and it will set you up in the future. I think that would be something that I would tell myself. In regards to doing something different, I don't know, because everything led to here. Like, I could point to so many different situations and relationships and mentors that I'm so grateful for, because all of it put me on the path of where I'd want to go. So I know initially when I was a younger professional, I wasn't really sold on this embedded being full-time, because I knew full-time meant a lifestyle change. I think people understand when you are full-time on a professional team, and it may even be similar for you in your role, it is a lifestyle. And so,
oh yes, oh yes,
it's not a 9-to-5 job, it's not a 40-hour-a-week role. It is a commitment. So when I had a private practice earlier in my career, I really enjoyed it, and consulting with different teams and having that variety. But being full-time, fully embedded, is the best way to go. It just, you get so much more value out of what you do, and being able to be there in whatever moment the athlete has. And it's unpredictable. When you have a private practice and you have a schedule, you're like, okay, I'm seeing this person at 3 and that person at 4. And you kind of see what's coming. But when you're full-time in pro sports, you don't know what's coming. You don't know what the day is going to go.
Any day, you don't know. It's a roll of the dice.
Yeah. I mean, one of our players called me yesterday as he was in the Delta Sky Lounge. He was like, hey, do you have time to talk now? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know? So we talk then. Like, it's a really fun part of what I do.
Awesome. So awesome. This episode is one of my favorites. Sorry to all my other guests. This was fun. And I'm going to say thank you, Dr. Dez. And, this was so enjoyable. And there's so much more I want to ask, and so many other things I would love to touch on. But again, it's your bye week. You have other things to do. I don't want to take too much of your time. However, I might reach out again to try and get you back on the show for other stuff.
I would be happy to do more. I really enjoyed this and your time. And I'm really careful of who I do podcasts with too. But the fact that you've approached this with your expertise and your professionalism, I really appreciate that greatly. So I'd be happy to do something again in the future.
Thank you so much. You were wonderful to speak with, and really damn educational. I learned so much today, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So thank you. Thank you for your kind words. Keep that wonderful career going. Good luck. Keep the playoff hopes up, and hope to see you in mid-February, right? That's the goal, mid-February.
Yeah, and I want to give you a shout out that I love your podcast name. Like, how clever is that? Wrap it up.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. And Gabe, that was all him. That was all our producer. What a wonderful name. He just came out and I looked at him. That's fantastic. That's exactly what we do and how we do it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.